And there it is. Once again, the body shots from Jason Quigley. Leaves himself open, and here comes the counter from Rosario. No man is more dangerous than when he's hurt, and Rosario is hurt. Oh, left hook once again, and down goes Rosario. I've seen this before, Bernard. He's not getting up.
No, he's not getting up. He got hit with a good shot. It was a good shot that paralyzed him. And you know what? In history, a lot of people fell from those shots.
Yeah, I've seen you do exactly that to your co-promoter, Oscar, yes, De La Hoya, and that was the exact reaction. This one was not to the solar plexus like the first one. This one was to the liver, and he delivered it perfectly, and that's why Rosario was not getting up.
Ladies and gentlemen, the end comes officially 2 minutes, 51 seconds, round number six. Referee Mike Ryan steps in, calls this bout. We have your winner. He is still undefeated, the Irish, Jason Quigley.
And Jason Quigley is on the line. Jason, good evening. Congratulations.
Good evening. How are you? Everything good?
Yeah, everything good. And good for you as well, I presume. How are you feeling after the fight?
Yeah, feeling great. You know, it's long time out of the ring, and it was great to get back in there with a good victory and a good solid test as well. And, you know, everything went smooth, everything went to plan, and we're moving forward now, excited.
Yeah, 53 weeks out of the ring to be exact, so a really long time with your hand injury. I'm sure it was great to get back in. We heard the commentary team on ESPN there describing the shot. It was a left to the body. Is that something you've been working on?
To be honest, it's not a shot that I throw pretty much, you know, but obviously with the change of camp over at the Ingle Gym, I think everybody knows that the Ingle Gym is known for not doing too much open sparring and doing a lot of body sparring, and maybe that's where that shot came from.
Okay, so you were slightly surprised it came out as much as anyone.
Yeah, like it was just a shot that... These are the kind of things that happen when you're in sparring and in training and everything like that there. And that wasn't a shot that I was looking for. It was mainly more the left hook to the head that I thought would have worked better than the actual left hook to the body, because I noticed in a few of his videos that whenever he leads off, he kind of puts his chin up in the air a little bit, and I thought maybe that I'd be able to catch him with a left hook on the chin. But, you know, his head was solid and hard, and I wasn't doing much damage to it, so I had to move downstairs to the body.
We mentioned 53 weeks out of the ring, which is an incredibly long time. Did you always know it was going to be so long out of the ring? When you picked up your hand injury last year, was it always going to be the guts of a year until you could fight again?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it was something that I tried not to think on too much, to be honest, and tried to take it a day at a time and not look that far down the line, because it was hard to take. You know, this is my job, this is my life, this is what I do, and to be told that you won't be able to do it for a year, maybe more, it's hard to mentally come to terms with that. But, you know, I just took things day at a time and trained hard every day. You know, even when I knew I didn't have a fight coming up or mightn't be in the ring for a good few months, you know, I had to keep myself busy, I had to keep myself active and keep in shape, and that's exactly what I've done, and it all stood by me on fight night on Saturday night.
Yeah, the fight was in Boston, and I think one of the lads was saying you're in New York at the moment, just taking some time out. Not a bad place to do it, I'm sure. So even just psychologically, when you've been in camp and preparing potentially for a war, and it's this very primal thing, as much as we dress it up, and I know it's the sweet science, but still, it's you're in camp and you got to get yourself in a certain mindset. What's it like in these 2, 3, 4, 5 days re-emerging after that, even psychologically as much as physically?
To be honest, it's actually weird for me at the minute too, because it's been that long. It's been over a year since I've been in this position, and you forget, like, because you're cutting weight and everything, and you're eating such clean food coming up to the fight and everything like that there, and you forget how kind of sore and achy you be after fights and everything as well. So you wake up after the fight thinking that, oh, I can eat what I want now for a few days and I can do what I want. Really, like, the celebration after the fight was, I went home, me and the girlfriend went back to the hotel, went over to my family and friends and everyone that was in the opposite hotel from us, and we sat there and drank tea and ate biscuits till the morning. And that's honestly what the celebrations were.
Rock and
roll. The next day, I went to lay down just for a quick nap around 4 o'clock. and I fell asleep at about 11 or 12 o'clock that night. You know, it takes a lot out of you.
Sure.
And, you know, it's just resting and chilling out now at the minute, to be honest.
And would your camp have been away from the girlfriend, away from family, away from friends and focus, or would you have allowed yourself to kind of live a semi-normal life in the midst of camp and the build-up to the fight?
Well, that was, I think, one of the mistakes that I did when I was in LA. It was very isolated and it was very away from everybody, friends, family, girlfriend, Ireland, my culture, everything. It was so far away from everything, you know what I mean? And I have brought everything back now, a lot of things into moderation, more stuff into moderation, you know what I mean? Not a feast or a famine.
Yes.
You know, I'm training in Sheffield and I be there majority of the time by myself with all the lads, you know, in camp. And we obviously go to Fortaventura as well out in the Canary Islands for training camps. But in between maybe the odd weekend, I'll go home to my family, friends, or anything like that. Sometimes during the week, the girlfriend will come out just to mix things up and break things up a little bit, you know. But at the end of the day, you're in training camp, your mind's focused and everything like that, but you need to, outside the gym and at the weekends and days you're not training, you know, you need to chill out and enjoy them days as well.
Okay, so it hasn't worked for you necessarily in the past to almost get into mean mode and block out the kind of softer sides of life. You're able to mix both. You're able to be in the ring and spar and focus on what you have to focus on, and then be at home and maybe the softer side, I suppose, and hang out with family and friends, and that's fine. You can mix the two.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think majority of boxers are very very easily distracted and can be easy led by friends and nightclubs and partying from being at home and being in that kind of comfort routine, you know. But that's a thing that I don't need to go into isolation mode. I don't need to go into training camps in the middle of nowhere, you know, because I'm dedicated. Do you know what I mean? I don't drink, I don't smoke. I live a clean life. I train hard. I'm dedicated, you know, go to my bed early, do what I have to do. And I don't really need that whole Rocky out in Russia kind of isolation thing, you know. But
makes for good montages, though.
Yeah, of course. Definitely, without a doubt. It makes good publicity. Maybe you can say that, you know what I mean? But not for me. I like to mix both, but don't get me wrong. It's very important to keep the head down and, you know, to get into that mean streak in your head as well. You know what I mean? You need to switch on. Like, we're not getting in there to dance with each other in the ring. We're getting in there to take lumps out of each other. So you need to switch on.
I can imagine, yeah. And so, did you, you talked about having tea and biscuits up all night. Very rock and roll of you. Have you been binging and eating terrible food and feeling terrible for it now?
Yesterday I went and got a lovely big steak and a few chips and everything I got there, and I had this big massive dessert after it. I tell you the truth, it wasn't good that night. My stomach was in bits, so I right away text Dom, the coach, and says, "Look, don't be worrying about me going off the boil here, because I'm back on my diet. My stomach's in bits now at the minute, so I'm back eating clean enough now, but nothing too hectic."
Yeah, this is the upside of eating clean, I suppose, is you feel good. So, I mean, you got the knockout. You're now, you're 14 wins with 11 knockouts. Like, were you hunting the knockout? Were you conscious? You'd been out of the ring a long time and you were live on ESPN, and did it cross your mind, well, it wouldn't be the worst thing here if I threw in a knockout? Or can you think like that when you're in the ring?
Look, the way I've explained things before, you know, us boxers, fighters, whatever you want to call us, you know, when we get into that ring, when we step through those ropes, you can kind of say we're a bit like the gladiators back in the day in the Coliseum. You know, we do crave that attention from the crowd. We want the crowd roaring and cheering our names, you know, but it's very important for us to concentrate on the game that we have ahead of us and the plan that we have, and, you know, our focus on how to take in that performance and get that victory. You know, we have to stay with our game plan. But at the end of the day, you know, in the heat of the moment, whenever you see a man hurt, this is a game where you can't give him a second chance, because one shot can change everything. And getting into this fight against Daniel Rosario, you know, I heard the interview Andy Lee done on this with you lads about this fight, and Andy hit the nail on the head exactly what I was thinking. You know, this is no fight back to, you know, test the hand out and to just an easy pushover for my comeback fight. Daniel Rosario is a tough operator. He's never been stopped before. Yeah. And only his three defeats, he's got beat on split decisions, majority decisions. He's never been beat comfortably. And a few of those decisions were controversial. Mm. And coming into that fight, Daniel Rosario said in the fighters' meeting, you know, I'm not leaving this fight to the judges' scorecards because I've been hard done by before.
Okay.
You know, he was in there to make a statement. He was in there to knock me out. And he was also just recently signed by Roy Jones Jr. Promotions. You know, so this was his big coming out, and this was his big chance to state his name and to state his authority. Mm. And I knew I was in for one tough night. I did not expect a knockout, and that's been all. That's been very truthful of you. I wasn't going in for the knockout or anything like that.
Mm.
But, you know, they do call me the animal and everything like that. And once I smelled blood, I had to go for it.
And you'd been out for 53 weeks with the hand injury, as we've been discussing. Was there any hesitation at any point early on in the fight when you're about to unload at one with all the force that you can muster up? Or did that cross your mind? Or was that well and truly tested out and put to bed in the sparring?
It was well and truly tested out. I had no doubts, or I didn't need to hold myself back in any way throwing the shot. But I remember the first few times I threw it, I didn't even think, oh, that landed well, or wonder did that hurt him. It was like, geez, there's no pain. My hands are all right. You know, that was the initial thought. But then obviously, as you've seen after that, then I was landing it with Will a few times.
Mm.
But I obviously noticed as well that he had a very solid chin. And you know, if you look back on that fight, there was a knockdown in the second round that the referee didn't call.
Mm.
But when you look back now, it was a clean shot. I caught him with a lovely right hand right in the chin and wobbled his legs and he fell down onto the ground. You know, wasn't called a knockdown, but it was.
Yeah.
But he wasn't badly hurt. He wasn't badly stunned. He got up and he came back just twice as strong. So that's why I had to change the game plan instead of going to the body.
Okay. And like Jason, I totally appreciate what you're saying about Rosario being a very tough opponent and one that you were taking very seriously. From the outside looking in, we look at you now and you're 26 years old and you're 14-0. And I mean, the injury last year was such a momentum halter for you. We're anticipating now you want to get a world title shot in the next 12 to 18 months. So we're kind of suspecting from the outside, especially after this delay of 53 weeks, you wanted to get rid of Rosario as quickly as possible. And we're anticipating you're going to be a very busy fighter over the next 12 to 18 months with a view to getting a world title shot within that time frame. Is that the plan?
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, this is the reason that I didn't come back with a real kind of light tune-up fight.
Mm.
Because, you know, I mean business. I'm here now at this stage of my career. I'm 26 years of age. I still have loads of time. Do you know what I mean? It's not as if I'm 30 years of age and I had a year out. Now I'm 31.
Yeah.
I really need to start making a lot of headway. You know, I'm 26 years of age. I live a clean life. I can go on and do this till I'm 33, 4, 5. Easy.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And I'm only 26. There's no panic. There's no rush on. But the stage that I'm at now, I don't want to be fighting stiffs. And I don't want to be getting in there with easy fights. And that's why we chose Rosario for this comeback fight.
Yeah.
And that's why he wasn't no pushover, and he proved that. But definitely now, you know, we really want to push on. We really want to, you know, keep fighting good opposition. Get a few big names under our belt. Men that have fought for world titles, former world champions, put herself in line and in contention in the next 12 to 18 months for a world title eliminator or a world title fight.
Okay. And how are things going at the Ingle gym? People obviously are very familiar with Brendan Ingle, the Dubliner who set it up 40 odd years ago, and his son Dominic is there now, because we've talked in the show about it plenty of times. You'd been in LA with Manny Robles. And I saw you saying that, you know, Manny would have kind of, and that gym would have focused almost on the Mexican style, and it's maybe something you didn't have in your amateur days, where you're fighting in close, and that was something that you developed under him. And the Ingle school of thought is maybe more about movement and technique, maybe. So that sounds like a nice enough blend. How have you found the move over to the Ingles?
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. You know, that's exactly what you described as the Ingle and the Mexican. it makes a beautiful blend. You know, there's not too many fighters that can do both.
No, it sounds like you'd be a very complete fighter if you could master both.
Of course, you know, there's a lot of fighters in there that become world champions that are one-dimensional, that can only either box or only either fight.
Right.
So I know I have the skills and talent to become a world champion, and I know now that I have the skills and talent to box and fight, and that's a recipe for danger for any of my opposition that will come in, in contact with me in the future. But, you know, the experience that I had with Manny Robles and over in LA was unbelievable. It's not my style. That is not my A game, as such, you could say, you know, to go to as in Mexican style fighting, everything like that. I have that there. I have that in my armor if it's ever need to be pulled out of the bag.
Yeah.
But, you know, my A game is my boxing, my skills, my technique, you know, using my distance, hand work, feet work, everything like that there. And it's a great blend. And, you know, the relationship that I have built with Dominic over the last, what could you say, it's 3-4 months, really, that I've been with him. You know, the bond that I have created with him is unbelievable so far. And it's only going to keep getting better week by week. So, and the whole lads in the gym, you know, the setup in the gym itself, the camaraderie between us all is just unbelievable.
Great, yeah. And so it sounds like the Ingle style is maybe more a natural fit for you and something you would have taken from the amateurs. Like to kind of learn the Mexican style over Manny, why is that tough? Do you, are there certain attributes you need? Is it more difficult to be in close and in a war with someone Mexican style, or like you know, I'm not somebody who can fight either. So I don't know if you can explain that to me.
It's like, you know, have you ever been to America?
Yeah.
Have you ever drove in America?
No.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like you're used to driving cars here in Ireland on the side of the road that we drive it. Whenever you go to America, you have to go and change the steering wheel on the opposite side and drive on the opposite side. You know, it's just something that I'm not used to doing. It's just something that the culture where I'm from, you know, where especially the pedigree that I grew up in were the high performance athletes in the high performance unit in Dublin. You know, it was all technical, skillful, amateur boxing, three rounds, in and out, nice and fast, scoring your points, not getting hit. But then moving over to LA, it was more Mexican style, setting down on your shots, letting your shots count, you know, putting power behind them, more than usual than what I would have done before. So it was a blend, you know, of everything coming together. And it was just something that I'm boxing since I'm 10 years of age. You know, I've always been learned to be a boxer, not a fighter. So I boxed from 10 years of age up until I was 23 when I turned professional. And then for them 3 years then, after 13 years of training to be kind of one type of fighter, trying to change to a different style of fighter, you know, that's 13 years of hard work that, you know, trying to mix that and change that. Obviously, it's going to take time. It's going to be hard. And I remember how hard it was. Manny was telling me to sit inside and to let your body shots go, you know, and I was like, I can't do it. Like, I feel there's no power behind my shots. I feel as if I'm doing no good. But now you look at it, you know, I'm doing body sparring now in the Ingle gym. I have all that experience behind me in LA. And, you know, look what I've done to my opponent.
Yeah, so you learned the technique under Manny to put power into those shots, to sit there and to hurt someone, basically.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, I actually never really knew I had that type of power, because in amateur boxing, I never knocked nobody out. Yeah, sure. I might have knocked a few people down, but I never knocked nobody out. But now, as a pro, since I started setting down my shots a little bit more, I've been leaving men on the deck. Like, you know, it's a great combination.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great combination to be able to blend the two of them. And not everybody can do that either.
I'm sure, yeah. Well, that's a nice thing to discover. Oh, I can knock people out. That's kind of a useful thing.
Especially in this game.
Listen, I can imagine. And 6 knockouts in 14, or 11 knockouts, excuse me, in 14 is no bad thing. One last thing I wanted to touch on with you, Jason, is just the psychology of moving over to Sheffield. Because, as mentioned, you were over in a beautiful style of life over in LA with Manny and Sunshine, and you're on the marina, and it's lovely. And you were on with us before, and you were saying, over there I was still as hungry and determined as I ever was, but I grew up in a one-bedroom flat with my mother and father next door to a Buc-ee's and above a pub. So living in a $4,000 a month apartment overlooking the marina didn't fit me, which always struck us as a really interesting quote. Do you feel more at home in Sheffield? Not to run down Sheffield or anything, but that, you know, the weather wouldn't be as nice and slightly tougher, more maybe working class environment. Do you feel more comfortable since you moved over in that respect?
Without a doubt, you know, that's everything he said is 100% spot on, because, you know, I was living, it was like I was constantly on a holiday in LA. You know, it was very mentally challenging for me to get up and to go training all the time, because it's just not the culture that I'm used to be training in. Like, do you know what I mean? It's not the culture that I grew up in. I'm used to more hardened facilities, more, as you say, working class kind of lifestyle. Mm. And, you know, the whole LA lifestyle didn't suit me. It was too fake. It was too much like a dream kind of thing. You know what I mean? And don't get me wrong, go and become multiple world champion and make loads of money, I might buy a home out there in the future, but I'm not going to be basing myself out there or bringing my children up out there. Do you know what I mean? It's a place where, it's just a place that's lovely to go to and to chill out and everything like that. But don't get me wrong, you know, I'm very grounded and I'm very proud and grateful of where I come from. Mm. And that's just who I am. There's people that will, people have called me crazy. They're like, how can you move from LA to Sheffield? Like, you know what I mean? And a few times I've thought about it, I was like, Jesus, right? No. But, you know, there's a reason I've done it. I want to become world champion. You know, boxing is a very mentally challenging, you need to be very mentally tough and very mentally strong.
Yeah.
And LA is a place that can weaken you, that it can make you too lackadaisy and can just get you too much into the high life. And I'm not ready for that high life yet. I have a lot of hard work to do to get to the top, and yeah, I'm right where I want to be right now in Sheffield, and working towards maybe having a house in Malibu or up in the Hollywood Hills
someday. Well, we'll come and do a show from your house in Malibu when you win a world title as a celebration. I mean, we'll all be happy to do that. And like, one bedroom flat with your mother and father. I don't know if you had siblings, but even if you didn't, that sounds fairly, well, you don't have loads of space there.
Yeah, no, you know, it was a place where I remember we used to have to go up the steps first, up, and then we had a wee sliding door into our flat. But before you turned into the flat, the Buc-ee's was just right there. And I remember there was a big man there that he always wore a big hat and had a big beard and smoked a cigar. And I used to be terrified of him. And I always remember, like, I used to call him the Boogeyman. I was like, oh, I can't go and look, the Boogeyman's out there. You know, it's like, but it's just, those are the kind of things that, you know, that I grew up in, that what I'm familiar with, that I know that's who I am. But yeah, of course, you know, we shared the same hallway as the flat that lived above us and everything, you know what I mean? All we had private was our sitting room and bedroom, you know what I mean? And didn't really have that private either, because my mother and father was in it as well. You know what I mean? So it was...
incredibly tough. I mean, by most standards in this country, that sounds incredibly tough.
Yeah, it is. But you know, that lifestyle and that upbringing has made me the person that I am today, and it has made me grateful for, you know, what my parents have done for me to get me here. You know, especially my mother. You know, she's a grafter and she's amazing. And you know, the two of them, fair play to them. You know, they were young when they had me, and they brought me up, and you know, we're doing not so bad right now, and it's all good, you know what I mean?
Yeah, great. Because, I mean, look, they would have to do a great job to almost imbue you with the sense of discipline and hard work and all the things you need to do well in life.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's like anybody, really, you know, growing up in Ireland, you know, there's such a kind of a culture in our country that it's, you know, work Monday to Friday, out in the beer at the weekends kind of thing, you know. And I'm not saying that everybody's like that, but there is a certain, you know, majority that that stick to that kind of culture and that always think that it's always somebody else that's going to achieve. It's always people from England or America that's always going to go out and achieve this. But, you know, really and truly, you know, most recently, it's a credit to our country that the success that we're having, because, you know, growing up, so a lot of us mightn't have had the best opportunities, but we're making the best opportunities for ourselves now. And there's a lot of young athletes and a lot of young sports people now that's really going out there and making a life for themselves and their family. And it's a credit to our small country. And, you know, we have every right to be proud to be Irish.
And I'm sure, I mean, I don't think any parent can hope their kid grows up and fights on ESPN in America and is 14-0 as a professional. That's kind of lofty enough ambition. But were they pushing you in terms of you should have ambition? You know, there's things you can do in the world, even if we're in a little apartment here at the moment. Actually, hard work will get you somewhere. Was that kind of part of their message to you, or was it just actually, you know, well, let's just get through the week kind of territory?
Yeah, it was and it wasn't. You know, it was the way it kind of was. You know, when we were younger, we did what we had to do to get by, and you know, we probably never had no real thought of being successful or going out and doing anything major in the world. You know, it was kind of just to get by and to live life and everything like that. But you know, as time went on, as I started boxing and, you know, my family seen the talent that I had in me, they never pushed me either, you know what right. I mean? And I think that was a very important thing, and it's a very important thing that, you know, if there's any parents listening, it's, you know, you have to let the children and let the people do what they want to do. Because
yes, and sorry to interrupt, the children can become a meal ticket for the family sometimes.
Exactly, you know what I mean? And if you need to love what you do to be successful at it. You know, you can't go and be hugely successful at something if you're just good at it. You'll be successful to a certain level. But if you're passionate about what you do, if you love what you do, you will succeed and you will go on that bar and go on that point of success, because you're going to give it more than you're going to give anything else, because you actually love what you do. And that's the sweet thing about it. You know, whenever you get a kid that's really talented at football and say he just loves rugby, if you give that kid the choice, he will end up even better at rugby than he ever would at soccer or football, because he's going to give more effort and more time into the rugby because he loves what he does and he's going to give it everything he's got. You know, it's not always just about talent and about how good you are. It's about loving what you're doing and enjoying what you're doing. And that's you're going to be happy doing it, so you're going to give it absolutely everything you got. And that's exactly the way that I grew up. You know, I grew up, I played all sorts of sports, hurling, Gaelic, soccer, boxing, everything. And, you know, I could have dipped my hand into any one of them.
Right.
But, you know, it was boxing that filled the hole in me, and it's kind of glad I stuck with the boxing.
I suspect so. And a last one, I presume your family are really enjoying the journey you're on now.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, it was great. My mother and, you know, a lot of my family and my girlfriend and everything were over in Boston. And, you know, it's great to have them all over there. It's great to have them on this journey with you, because, you know, that's what it's all about. Do you know what I mean? It's about sharing these great moments with the people that you love, and, you know, going to the top with the people that you love, because they're the people that make it special. And you know, I'm very grateful for the people that I have around me right now at this present moment, because there's a lot of people come and go through your career and through your life and everything like that there. But you know, I have to say now that I have a great team around me. I'm so grateful and appreciative of it, and you know, we plan on keeping this speed train going now.
Good man.
No stopping.
Yeah, absolutely. More tea and biscuits to celebrate after big wins to come.
Definitely, without a doubt. Mental stuff.
Yeah, enjoy the next few days in New York as you unwind and then go again. Jason Quigley, thanks a million. See ya.
Top stuff. Thanks for having me, lads. Take her handy.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter @OffTheBall.
News Talk 106 to 108.